The pop-up Globe is about to begin its final Auckland season. The theatre, a temporary replica of the second Globe Theatre, presented its first season in Shakespeare Anniversary Year 2016, and since then it's played to more than 350,000 people. I'm going to be talking soon to the theatre's director of music, right from the very beginning, Paul McLaney. But first let's hear a piece of music that was composed for the pop-up Globe. This is the overture from Romeo and Juliet. Overture from Romeo and Juliet, music by Paul McLaney and the pop-up Globe Theatre Company, the performers there. And I'm joined now live in our Auckland studio by Paul McLaney. Paul, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Look, you've been with the pop-up Globe, as I mentioned, right from the very beginning.
Yes, that piece of music you played was the first play that we did, that and Twelfth Night, and obviously restaging Romeo and Juliet this year, but with completely different music.
That is an interesting thing, because when you have written music for a play such as that, and you performed it so many times, don't you find yourself with another production just thinking, oh, wanting to go down the same rabbit tracks with the music?
Well, I think it's all based on the director's approach to it. I mean, when you're talking purely instrumental pieces of music, then you know, that's just more for the repertoire. But the interesting place for me is when it comes down to the song settings. So thankfully, Romeo and Juliet only has one song in it, Heart's Ease. But when we remounted Twelfth Night, which has quite a lot of songs, Come Away Death and the Clown Song on Mistress Mine, The Wind and the Rain, resetting all of those was a very interesting process for me, because it was like trying to forget a song you already knew and trying to, you know, justify the reason for doing it. You know, it had to be better than it was the first time.
Yeah, because I know that that many songwriters or many composers, it's very easy to imprint on an existing piece of music for an existing text, and you're having to fight against that and deliberately do something different. But when it's your own music, that must be especially the case.
Well, I think having that the veil of years between was very helpful, because obviously you want to be evolving and getting better, basically, as a musician and as a writer. And I think in the time, I'd done 18 shows in between that of setting Shakespeare, so the nuance of it all had become something I was probably more attuned to. Though I like both versions of Mistress Mine, I like both versions of Come Away Death.
Well, it's good that you do still like your previous versions.
They have their own merits.
Yeah. How does a pop-up globe production work, Paul, in terms of the sequence of events? Because I know that the texts of many of the plays, some of them have songs, some of them may have oblique references to music from some of the spoken parts, but there's no real directions. Music plays here for 5 minutes.
Yeah, lots of Tuckett
like
sonnets and lots of fanfares, but not really tell you. I mean, there's lots of songs there. I mean, As You Like It is almost a musical in and of itself. And I think when we produced that in the second year, that really did set a template for that and Much Ado About Nothing. I always get those two mixed up. It's like Palmerston North and New Plymouth.
I do the same, actually.
The N and the P, I think.
I think it is.
but they set the templates, I think, for and we saw that the audience had such a great response to the set pieces of music. So in more recent productions, where there hasn't been a wealth of musical instruction, we have added songs, and generally David Lawrence or Miles will find some text from 1600 and something for some poor dying prisoner who's written some poem on the back of a stool, and I have to set music to it.
But it sounds like a very good way of doing it, and it may even have a sort of historical precedent to it. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. I've been reading a book recently which has been a real, I don't know why it didn't cross my path earlier, but it's totally in resonance with my own approach, and it's a book called Electric Eden, which is by a musicologist called Rob Young, and it's all about the visionary music of Great Britain, and it starts with pieces around Ralph Vaughan Williams and John Ireland, and how in the early 19th century they had, like in European culture, they had gone out into the provinces really and started collecting these folk melodies, getting all the crofters and farmers to sing these tunes to them, and they write them down in their little notebooks. They'll go back and make these more elegant classical pieces around them. But the idea of folk music, the book goes on to talk about how the only real thread that weaves all folk music together is its oral tradition of being passed down. And my whole approach to Shakespeare, which interestingly enough, he didn't write these plays down in a book and something, when after he died, they tried to find all the pieces of paper and people remembering bits and put together his life's work. But I try, and my number one trick is to imagine that I've already seen the play and try and remember how the melody went.
Ah.
And I'm really fascinated in terms of my working methodology around folk songs, especially things like She Moves Through the Fair and then Christmas carols, because Christmas carols are really interesting pieces of music in that they work without accompaniment. We hear lots of carolers, singing, and sometimes they're singing harmonies, sometimes they're singing really bad harmonies, and sometimes they're all singing in unison. But Silent Night or Come All Ye Faithful or Once in Royal David City, they lose none of their power without accompaniment. The melodies are strong enough, and the melodies infer the harmonic space that those tunes live in, and I'm really fascinated by that oral tradition of melody passing down, and a lot of those melodies can't be attributed to any one person because they pass through so many hands on the way to you.
Indeed.
And that's a process that's still happening today.
Well, it is fascinating, because listening to that that piece from that original production of Romeo and Juliet, there was certainly, you could hear the folk influence, but it did seem to have a quality to it where it almost reached into a kind of, a sort of prehistory or an alternative mythology to it.
Well, I'm totally fascinated by that. You look at the work of Tolkien, that's exactly what that's doing.
Of course, yes.
I think that's a shared idea of a folk memory. It's because when it gets locked down within an academic framework, it gets locked in time. And the whole point of folk tradition is for it to be contemporary in any given moment.
Mm.
I think in the folk revival in the mid 60s into the mid 70s in England, you really saw that conversation happening in real time, with Steel Iceman and Fairport Convention and stuff. And you could see that they're realizing, and all the diehards wanted everything to be played on acoustic guitar, but then there's a conversation about how acoustic guitars only really came into currency in England, in the late 40s, early 50s. So if you really want to do folk music, you have to do it totally unaccompanied a cappella. Mm. So whatever is this idea of when you lock something into a tradition, you're locking it, you're putting a parameter around it that can't be shifted. And really, I think the success of Pop-Up Globe has been, yes, it's a working replica of the Second Globe Theatre, and yes, we're using texts from 1600s, but we're doing it in 2019.
Mm. But the way you're doing it, Paul, it's fascinating, because you could, with the music, have taken the approach of, oh, we'll collect together a whole lot of music from the period of the play, and original songs that had been composed by people like Thomas Morley or things like that. But you haven't done that. You've created, oh, I don't know, this kind of very contemporary sound that it's at the same time has this kind of background feel to it of being very ancient.
Well, I think it's it's interesting, because the premise is that we have this theatre, which I sort of call the empathy drum, which in and of itself it's an instrument. It plays the work of Shakespeare. It's like a record player that only plays vinyl written by Shakespeare. we set ourselves the premise that we do have is that no amplification, so everything has to be acoustic. And while there's not really much recorded in terms of what instruments we're using, we look around at things like shawms and, obviously brass instruments and precursors of the trombone and stuff. But, obviously lutes and hurdy-gurdies and what have you. But the fact that we only have two musicians generally per show, maybe three, we learned very fast after the first series that the loudest instrument we actually have is the cast. So we moved to lots of ensemble singing, sort of choir arrangements. And then the only thing louder than the cast is the audience. So anytime we can use the audience, like in Much Ado About Nothing, there's a moment where we get the audience to hum, and they become like the drone over which the Benedict sings. And that's a really great moment. That's one of the moments I'm most proud of, I suppose.
Well, you mentioned folk song and Christmas carol. We actually have one of the Christmas carols you suggested to us by email a little bit earlier lined up here. Let's listen to, I don't really need to say what it is. I'm sure people will know the tune.
Timely as well.
Indeed, exactly. Well, indeed, that is O Come All Ye Faithful, the Alora Festival singers there performing that piece. I'm talking with Paul McLaney, who is the musical director for the Pop-Up Globe. Paul, as you mentioned, the sort of congregational aspect of something like that, a Christmas carol, is extraordinary. And when you've got the loudest instrument of the lot, the audience tripping in with things with the globe, it gives that wonderful communal feel to it.
And that's the interesting part about being in the Globe. When you see Shakespeare performed in that room, it makes a lot more sense of the soliloquies and things like that, because you become sort of complicit with whoever is on stage talking. If it's someone nice like Benedict, or if it's someone awful like Iago, you find yourself clapping along to something that you maybe wholeheartedly don't agree with, and you become complicit in that thought. And makes a lot of sense. That the reason I picked O Come All Ye Faithful too is it's an example of a very, very complicated melody. I think it's like a 64-bar melody before it repeats. You know, which is twice as long as Hey Jude. And so these orally transmitted pieces of music that have passed down through the ages, which everybody knows, you know, they are a lot more. There's a lot more complexity available in that than you would think.
Certainly is. When it came to Shakespeare's original productions, I would imagine that his musicians would have brought in popular tunes of the day. Do you do something similar, as well as using folk song references? Have say a contemporary pop song that you can get away with without having to pay royalties for?
Well, when we do use contemporary pop songs, we do pay the royalties. So.
Well, the artists will be very pleased about that.
No, I mean, definitely there's, Hamlet in the grave diggers scene, you know, he's meant to be singing snatches of tune that the audience would know, you know, so it doesn't make sense to use something that an audience in 1600 and whatever would have known. Makes more sense if we're using Old Town Road or, you know, some Taylor Swift song or Ed Sheeran or whatever's popular in the charts, because the audience is meant to recognize it. It's not an academic challenge. It's meant to be instantly, oh, we see what you're doing there. As You Like It, I mean, there was a a version of My Heart Will Go On, which was playing into those same sort of idioms. You know, as I say, we could be all totally academically correct and use songs that we know were popular in the day, but they have to travel for an audience in 2019. And I think, you know, a lot of people's childhood memories of Shakespeare are very dusty and very dry. And, you know, I think if anybody who's come along to see a pop-up club show would realize that is completely the opposite. You generally end up covered in blood. And
you have been warned if this is your first time going, then, yes.
And very sore cheeks. There's a lot of comedy, and even the tragedy is, you know, the first half of Romeo and Juliet is almost, you know, has a lot of comedic elements. You know, it's only the second half that becomes very dark. And
it's a fascinating thing that in the context of a small theatre, although it can hold a fair number of people, nobody is more than about 15 metres away from the... the performers.
That's correct, yeah.
It provides this extraordinary immediacy. I have to confess, Paul, that I've not been to the pop-up Globe, nor to the actual Globe in London, but I have been in London to the Sam Wanamaker Theatre, which is a small indoor candle-lit theatre. And the emotional power that you get for being so close to the performers, it's tangible, you can feel it.
Well, yeah, I had a similar experience recently, looking at some VR stuff, and the thing when you put on VR headsets and you're looking at, and it was a dance, and then the dancer ended up sort of eyeballing the camera, and it's really unsettling to be stared at, but you realize it's not a real person. And I was at the preview of Romeo and Juliet a couple of nights ago, and the first time that they kiss, you know, there's a whole bunch of people standing there looking at two human beings kissing, and that's not normally something you stare at. If that happened on the bus or on the train, you know, you would avert your eyes and give these people some privacy, but that's not a private moment in the context of theatre. So it's really interesting, and looking at, you know, the demographic of the audiences, it really, there was people there from the age of 9 to 90. And, you know, and for a lot of those children, it'd be the first experience of a lot of those sort of public spectacles.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing, because as you've said, so many of our memories of Shakespeare do tend to be quite academic, quite dry, quite dusty. Although in my case, I happen to remember that I saw the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet, funnily enough, and it actually put me off Shakespeare for about a decade. Though other people absolutely loved it, and that was their way in. So horses for courses, I guess.
Totally, but, and I think you see all this epiphanies dropping. I think there's a great video of Rob Brydon saying, you know, if you don't like Shakespeare, and he talks about all of the words that have entered our and you can see when these lines are dropping, and, you know, the famous speeches by Hamlet and stuff, and all these kids going, oh, I didn't realize that Shakespeare said that. Oh, I didn't realize that Shakespeare made that up.
Exactly. How do you find Shakespeare's lyrics for composing to? Are they easy? Is it difficult? Because I know that even just in the normal, in inverted commas, part of Shakespearean text, there is such music within the words themselves.
Well, my involvement with the pop-up Globe came about, I'd done a project where I had set 12 soliloquies. So obviously there's lots of lyrics in Shakespeare, but these were all, you know, speeches from Love, Labour's Lost and Hamlet and the Scottish play. And I find them incredibly musical anyway. You know, there's obviously they're in iambic pentameter, but just the lyricism is just, it's like eating a Black Forest gatto. You know, so much stuff going on. And I had set those to music, and that had been a really interesting process. And that brought me to the attention of Miles, and then we had a chat, and he asked me to write the music for the for Twelfth Night. And so that was the first time I'd set a song was for Twelfth Night. And having done all of the soliloquies, the songs have a meter, and they have a, it's a bit, I suppose it's a bit like Elton John receiving lyrics from Bernie Taupin or something. Mm. You know, if they're written to be melodies, then it's just about uncovering them. And as I say, I basically try and trick myself into thinking that I'm remembering it rather than inventing it.
Indeed. It sounds a very good way of doing it. Now, there can't be too many opportunities such as this, music director for a replica Shakespearean theatre. But as we've said, this is the final season in Auckland. Is there going to be still continuing work musically for you concerning the pop-up globe and any kind of future iterations it may have?
That's my understanding. I think what's happened, you've got to bear in mind, is that within the repertoire of Shakespeare and within the commercial context of putting on a show on a Friday night, Saturday night that people want to come to, you know, there's not many people want to go and, you know, have three or four glasses of wine and watch Cymbeline.
Come on, it's a good play.
Or the history plays, you know. I think within that repertoire, we have really sort of approached a lot of the greatest hits, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that the touring life of the pop-up globe from here on in will lean very heavily into that collection of greatest hits.
Mm.
So we have explored those, and those songs exist, and that music exists.
So you may not be continually asked to do more and more different versions of the same songs then?
I'm up for it, but I think we are pretty close with where we are now.
Yeah, because the pop-up globe, it has already travelled to, I think, Melbourne and Sydney as well?
And Perth,
I hadn't realised that.
It was the closing night of Measure for Measure last night in Perth.
Ah.
So that's been going for 2 or 3 months, and
right.
It's toured New Zealand as well, various...
That's right, I knew about that one, yep.
So, we partner with Live Nation for pop-up globe shows internationally, so they, you know... I'm not at liberty to say much about that, and it's all a bit cloak and dagger, to be honest. But obviously, these productions have been well loved, and the figures speak for themselves in terms of engagement. And I've been in the pop-up globe when we've had a full house of, you know, secondary school students, and it's a marvel to watch there's a whole generation of New Zealand school children who have been through the pop-up globe experience, and that has forever altered their opinion. And their response to Shakespeare, which is a pretty that in and above all things, I think, in terms of pop-up globe success, is the biggest success.
Indeed, with the music you've been writing for the pop-up globe, and with your association with it, do you find that it has altered how you approach music and how you would generally compose for other projects as well?
It's definitely shifted my natural approach to songwriting. I generally used to write, you know, melodies or chord progressions, and then produce them, arrange them, and then once that was established as a mood or a space to sing into, I would try and match the lyric to suit the mood of the piece of music. But now it makes so much more sense to me to figure out what it is you want to say, and then use your musical skill and arsenal to add melody to that thought, rather than have a melody and find out what the thought is.
Mm.
That's just one approach, really. I mean, I'm currently working on an album where I did completely the opposite of that, so who knows?
Hey, well, Paul, thank you very much for coming in and talking to me this afternoon. I'm very, very appreciative of that, and best of luck for this upcoming season.
Thank you very much.
For the Pop-Up Globe. It starts quite soon, I believe.
It opens on the 13th.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Paul, best of luck. I will let you go now.
Let's have
a little bit of folk-influenced music. This is a rather fascinating arrangement of She Moved Through the Fair from Van Morrison and the Chieftains.
said to me, my mother won't mind, and my father won't slight you for your lack of kind. And she stepped away from me, and this she did say, it will not be long, love, till our wedding day. She stepped away from me, and she moved through the fair. And slowly I watched her move here and move there. She went her way slowly with one star awake, as the swan in the evening moved over the lake. I dreamt it last night that so softly she entered, that her feet made no din. She came close beside me, and this she did say, it will not be long, love, till
Morrison and the Chieftains with the folk song She Moved Through the Fair. My thanks once again to Paul McLaney, Director of Music for the Pop-Up Globe, beginning its last season in Auckland, starting with Romeo and Juliet on Friday the 13th.